Have you seen this? Or maybe you saw another inferior movie that passed for it?
Welcome to Have You Seen This?
The world's only podcast about obscure, overlooked, and misbegotten media.
All discussions will be spoiler heavy.
You have been warned. Gattaca, those are all letters from DNA genetic pairs. That's the joke.
People went wild for DNA in the 90s.
I know, and now you don't even hear about it anymore.
You know, you had this movie, you had Jurassic Park, you had O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, now it's... people could not get enough of deoxyribonucleic acid.
Yeah, now it's all NFTs and AIs. What happened? You aren't going to get any good movies out of that.
It's funny because I think that the writer-director of this, Andrew Niccol, like, he predicted, like a lot of science fiction authors, he predicted some aspects of our dystopia, and then some stuff is,
and then the real world is like, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll do you one better. We're gonna make this so much worse. Yeah,
hold my beer.
Well, yeah, it's like the same thing about, you know, was it William Gibson being like, hey, thanks for not bringing up that I failed to predict cell phones and they're like ubiquity.
Well,
it's 2077 and I'm a net runner. Get me to a payphone.
I've never read that book.
It's fine.
I don't read books.
No, I just watch movies, and even then, I am not very good at it.
I think soon after this movie came out, he had another one, mm-hmm. which might be more relevant to our current timeline.
Yeah.
Nobody liked it, though. It was called Simone, and it was about an AI actress.
Oh, yeah. I did not watch that, because it didn't look good.
Very few people did.
Well, why aren't we reviewing that one?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe,
Since, like, you know, from the trailer, I didn't really think much of it.
Well, tell you what, next time I'm at your place, let's take a look at it on Tubi, and then we can turn to each other 10 minutes in and be like, you just want to put B-Movie TV back on? And,
be like, yeah, I was waiting to see what Doug is playing for the third time this week.
I'm not wild about tonight's movie. I'm not going to shit on it, because that seems unfair.
Yeah, take that, Gattaca, from 25 years ago.
Well, I am very much in the minority on this one because people really seem to like this movie. Like, if you... and I think that my Letterboxd friends list is kind of a good barometer of what the in-the-know cinema kids are into. This movie is rated quite highly among the believability rating on this movie is quite high.
Put one in the swear jar.
Ton of 4-star reviews on this one, which I'm a little taken aback by. Did you happen to see this at Ackerman Union like I did?
I believe I was in the same room with you, yes. We didn't know each other at the time. Lucky me.
We wouldn't know each other for a few years.
Yeah, that's when things really went to shit.
Yeah, and then we ended up in this dystopian timeline.
Right, yeah.
You know, if we'd never met, we would be living in a utopia. I don't know where the wires crossed and we got on the wrong path, but
we fell in with a bad crowd. That bad crowd happened to be each other.
I thought it was because I was going to the science fiction club meetings at UCLA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we all swim in the same, you know, miasma.
Sewer.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, dorks.
Yeah, dorks.
They look like
they
dorks.
They look like dorks.
Yeah, so we both saw this at Ackerman Union, and I remember, like, just not really caring for it at the time. And when I suggested this movie for the show, it was partially because I wanted to revisit it, because...
You want to just come back and dump its books a second time.
Well, I think that it's a good idea.
Yes, and...
I think it's a good idea to revisit 20-year-old opinions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I have been wrong about a lot of movies that I liked or disliked mm-hmm. in the past. So why not revisit something, especially something which a lot of my friends seem to like? But it's not a bad movie.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a little light for my taste, but what's your capsule?
Well, here, for our listeners who maybe, like, you have something to do, like, you're trying to get out of the house and, like, the podcast is playing, you're like, just wrap it up, guys, I gotta go. Gattaca is slight but stylish.
Yes. So, wow, that's really good.
Yeah, see, I told you, we're done in record time.
Well, see you guys later.
Right, yeah, tune in next week. It's a, because I, it is an easily digestible movie, which is probably why it gets a lot of four star reviews. When you suggested it, I'm like, oh, shoot, I need to watch this again. But do I? Because I remember everything from it. I mean, it's paced and presented so, I don't know, cleanly, yes. Matter of factly that, like, I remember picking up on everything. I forgot one major plot point that kind of comes at the end, but I remember
twisty.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember all of it. I remember the parameters that they were working within. I remember the difficulties that are overcome by our protagonist Vincent. I remember
Vincent
the ending.
Vega.
I remember particular shots. And this is a different Vincent hanging out with Uma Thurman. But, like, yeah, I saw this at, you know, Ackerman in, what, 97, and I remembered everything from it, nigh everything. And so we came back to review it again, and I'm like, yeah, I already remember this. So I think that because it, like, it isn't particularly, experimental or challenging, but mm-hmm. it's well presented, and that seems to,
yes.
to carry a lot of the movie, which I guess is kind of central to its theme, because it does, you know, posit a society where people can be genetically engineered to be, you know, as one of the character puts it, to paraphrase them, you know, it's still you, but it's the best of you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you can still be you, but you can be, like, you know, if you just kind of edit out all the mistakes and all the foibles, you know, like we do when we're recording our show, and get, like, just the good parts, then, you know, then you can have people who are like that, and, you know, you can just be the best version of yourself, which there's more to it than that. And that really is the thing that I discovered on this, my second, you know, two decades hence viewing of it, is, you know, because it does set up this sort of, you know, have and have nots, sort of different classes of society, where, you know, there are the faith born, where it's like, hey, we're just going to toss a coin and see how this person turns out, versus the people who are a sure thing, and it's like, we're gonna end up with, you know, a safety cushion, you know, we're gonna end up with a safety net.
We're stacking the deck.
Yeah, they're stacking the deck. If this were a game of Traveler, this would be a person who starts with a social score of 10 or higher, where they get that plus one bonus and automatically qualify for the noble term. But, yes, you were about to say something, Jen?
I just wanted to make extra sure that I wasn't about to step on a long discursive piece about Traveler, because I was going to ask about Traveler. If you were to set this up as a Traveler scenario,
mm-hmm.
you know, I guess, what would you do? I guess you could give your players, like, kind of preformed characters, and then it's, are you one of the chosen, the golden ones, or are you, as they say in this movie, an invalid?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that Traveler's more about enforcing those cultural hierarchies. I think that Call of Cthulhu is probably going to be better suited to that, because that has more about investigation and deception. Although mm-hmm. the investigation in this movie itself is pretty slight. It's sort of like, we had a premise, we had a character study, and we need to kind of put a plot around that. Because otherwise, like, the thing kind of evaporates. Like, you have to have the risk of being found out as an invalid, as a natural born, you know, faith born person, who doesn't belong in this world. And, you know, in order to have some kind of conflict in there. And that conflict itself is, you know, like I said, it's pretty minimal. It's dealt with in ways that aren't particularly complex or nuanced. Like, there's not, you know, you aren't watching, like, you know, an episode of Breaking Bad where, you know, they spend, you know, 10 minutes showing how someone's able to, like, slip a bottle of pills into someone's pocket, which they do. It's the sort of thing where it's like, you know, oh, there's a little bit of sleight of hand. I prepared for this. You know, I'm being very meticulous about my genetic material to make sure that I'm not discovered. But
I always incinerate my cum socks.
Right. Yeah. As you should. But I mean, please be upwind of that. So the like actual investigation plot kind of only exists to drive the tension of the you know, the invalids versus the I don't know what they're called, but
the Morlocks.
Yeah, your societal betters.
Your Borgnines.
Right. Yeah, Borgnine appears in this. Oh yeah, because they call the lower class the degenerates, which I think is cute. but yeah, the right. Yeah. Okay.
Please continue.
All right. But yeah, I mean, the movie mostly Kosan style. It has a nice, like, retro-futurism 1950s aesthetic, which is evocative of the space race, and also evocative of, I don't know, America in the 1950s when there was a particular group of people who didn't have the same rights as everyone else who was going into space. Maybe you can think of them.
Yeah, and if you make your movie with that kind of aesthetic, you don't necessarily have to worry about casting in such a way that's diverse anywhere but on the fringes of the story.
Right. Because
I'm being a little mean.
yeah, well, I get it. But yeah, it works as a metaphor in that regard, because you do have Vincent, and his life is defined by his genetics. It's the one thing that you can't change about yourself. And that, for the most part, determines the direction that his life goes in, were it not for his ambition. So you can kind of see at the point where, you know, despite all his aspirations of, you know, being an astronaut and studying astrophysics and wanting a better life for himself,
He wants to be a faith man.
Yeah, he wants to be a faith man. But you see, there's a point too where it's like, yeah, I'm here as the janitorial crew, and you're like, where have we seen this disparity before?
Yeah, in this society, there are those who go to space and those who scrub toilets.
Right. Yeah.
I assume that maybe machines are doing a lot of the other labor in this society.
Well, you know, it's one of those kind of speculative sci-fi kind of worlds where it's like, just one thing is completely different.
Yeah, and I want to make that clear, because that's I don't know why I'm treating this movie with kid gloves, but, you know, I don't want to just be like, the piece of shit sucks.
Well, it's not a bad movie, but it is.
No.
I think, like, the thing is that it isn't, I don't know, it's like, it's not as, you know, mind-bending as, like, The Matrix. It's not as trite as, like, Vanilla Sky. It's not as weird as, like, Naked Lunch. It's not as impenetrable as Primer. It's, you know, it's what, you know, might dismissingly refer to as middle brow, Jen. Like, you can say that.
Damn, you said it even before I said it. Amazing. It's like you've known me a long time.
Too long.
Like, I was saying before, I should make it clear that I don't necessarily want to ding this movie for the simplicity of its premise, because I think it's okay to make a movie that's highly stylized and deals in kind of big ideas. It might just not be a movie that I'm gonna get a lot out of. Like, I like a little more meat on the bones.
Right. Well, that's the same thing that I had with it, which is the criminal investigation that drives the plot and a lot of the tension in this is pretty simple. It is Alan Arkin as the detective, where he's just like, look, it's someone with a certain kind of genetic material. And again, like, the movie has the restraint to not bash you over the head with it. But mm-hmm. it is Alan Arkin being like, look, the killer is obviously someone of a lower social class, so we'll just round up all the people who are of a low social class until we find the guy who matches, who fits the description, mm-hmm. and we'll arrest him. He's probably the one who did it. I don't know. I'm not going to, like, look for motive of any of the people who work here, all these white-collar workers who are beyond reproach. Clearly, yeah. none of them did it. You know, rich people don't break the law. You know, there's that same, that classism that is just an undercurrent that, you know, the movie has the restraint to not beat you over the head with it.
Yeah, and as it turns out, the murderer is, in fact, one of the chosen, as we later find out. So, you know, that's provocative. I like the idea of, because it certainly relates to real life, the idea of law enforcement making assumptions,
right.
which turn out to not be true, where class-based, it's like, yeah, it's gonna be this fucking kind of person. Let's round up all those people.
Yeah, and they do. But yeah, it shows that, rich, powerful, wealthy people can, in fact, be malicious, which you don't need to come to this podcast to get that kind of societal insights. But
welcome to the Hot Takes Cast.
Right, yeah. There, I said it.
Spicy.
Yeah.
Ooh, hot ghost pepper. Ooh, my tongue. Right.
And, you know, poor people can also not necessarily be murderers. So, you know, it's very even-handed, this movie.
Yeah, in fact, you could say that Ethan Hawke in this movie is one of the good ones.
he's an uppity indie film star, you know.
Before I forget, you realize, of course, that this movie is responsible for Maya Hawke.
Who's Maya Hawke?
The daughter of Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman.
That happened?
They met on this movie and were married for a few years.
Huh.
And now it's long enough since this movie came out that their child is acting in movies of her own.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wonder if they named her after Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
God, that, you know, that one extra that in that scene, she was great, wasn't she?
Yeah, that scene that scene that neither of us were in.
This was in. But yeah, so there you go.
Right. But I mean, it is, and I think I can understand Jen's basic revulsion about this movie, which is that
I threw the fuck up when I watched it. It was disgusting.
Because it is.
No, like the worst thing that happened when I was watching this movie, I think both times I saw it, was that I got a little bit bored. I was maybe checking the time on my, I wasn't checking my phone.
Mm hmm.
In 1997.
You weren't checking your Motorola Razr?
Right. I don't even think I had my little flip phone at that point.
Yeah.
I might have been playing Wordscapes while I watched this tonight. But
yeah, I was probably listening to this new audio format. It was called MP3s, you might have heard about.
Oh, dude, you're listening to The Prodigy?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I was listening to this band Daft Punk. They're French.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I like world music now.
What a sophisto.
Yeah, yeah. I'm as sophisticated as one of the upper crust people in the movie.
Well, you are of German extraction.
Right, yeah. I got some literature about that.
Also, can we talk about how a non-zero percentage of this movie revolves around Ethan Hawke's dick? And
yes, a non-zero amount.
And a Gattaca employee's admiration for his penis, which he apparently gets to look at every day.
Lucky him.
Yeah.
That's what he's paid in. He goes as a volunteer. He's like, I just want to see Vincent's dick every day.
I just want to look at penises as they're peeing. I'm a little freaky like that. Not as freaky as the guy who runs the place.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he likes them a little young, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
That was Gore Vidal.
Gore Vidal, yeah, right.
Gore freaking Vidal. I love Gore Vidal.
Was he the one on the boat, or is that his sparring partner? The other guy.
Wait, is this snails or oysters that we're talking
about?
No,
this is that story that you always tell me that I don't care about, which is why I don't remember any of the details from it. But it was like a Crossfire show, and it was, what, Gore Vidal on one side and some hateful conservative pedo on the other?
You are thinking of the series of television debates during the Democratic convention in Chicago in 1968 when Gore Vidal faced off against the National Review's William F. Buckley. And things got so heated at one point that Buckley kind of lost his shit a little, and he said to Gore Vidal, "Now listen, you queer," and then threatened to punch him in the face on live TV. And if you look at Vidal's face in that clip, you could tell he's like, "Oh my God, this is amazing."
Yeah,
I'll suck you in your goddamn face, and you'll stay plastered.
Yeah, that's what Jane kept saying.
There's a great documentary about that whole thing called Best of Enemies. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, that is one of those. That's what the kids say, like, new core memory. Like, that is one of those things that, you know, like, for the rest of his life, Gore's like, "Billy, I fucking got you.
I know.
So hard." Right.
Yeah, a million percent. Because, of course, William F. Buckley was instrumental to the rise of conservatism beginning in the 60s, which arguably he's pretty responsible for the state that we find ourselves in today.
That's unfortunate.
And Gore Vidal was, you know, the novelist, historian, man of letters, and essentially left opposition to Buckley, at least in the case of this debate. So you got the left versus the right, and the right kind of lost its cool a little bit when confronted with queerness.
With people who just, like, don't cower to them.
Which is funny because I'm told that Buckley really liked his yacht boys.
That's what I'm saying. There, now we got it.
Right. And have
not
I
so
told...
different, you and I, Gore says to Buckley.
Both patrician men with the proclivities, one might say. Have I told you my theory about William F. Buckley and his wife, Pat?
Probably.
I know the kids at home love this stuff. So my theory about William and Pat Buckley, they had a son, Christopher Buckley, who I think later went on to become a novelist. One son. So I have always maintained that William and Pat Buckley fucked one time.
Right. Pat, it's like, you owe me this.
They were obliged to. They knew that it is a thing that must be done when one gets married. One must attempt to the best of one's ability to produce issue or progeny. So they did it exactly once, and then they were both like, "Well, thank goodness that disagreeable business is over with." And so William nutted in Pat, and then 9 months later came Christopher Buckley. That is my theory. Yeah.
Or into a turkey baster, I don't know.
He jerked off onto a boat boy's buttocks, and then they scooped it into Pat Buckley. I mean, it's
and
less...
that is how you form a superior race.
Yes, and this kicks off the last 30 like minutes of society.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's like some... I can't think of the name. Thelema.
Oh,
Satanist?
Yeah, Crowley.
Yeah, that's some Crowley shit right there.
Oh, like when Crowley and Jack Parsons did sex magic to, like, create the Scarlet Woman, and then Marjorie Cameron just, like, showed up, and they're like, "Holy shit, it fucking worked. Can you believe this shit? Look at her! Look at her!"
So I was talking to a Satanist stripper a little while back, and she's like, "With these two dickheads, there's no way they're gonna, like, summon Baphomet. Like, they have no... Like, Baphomet doesn't want anything to do with the two of you assholes." So I'm just like, all right, cool. Way to, like, represent Satanism.
There you go. Yeah. And then Jack Parsons blew himself up.
Yeah, well, you know, the fly too close to the sun... Hey, speaking of rocket scientists who tried really hard, there's this movie called Gattaca from 1997.
Oh, tell me about it.
Okay, well, it's got Ethan Hawke, it's got Jude Law, and it's got Uma Thurman in it. And I remember a review at the time of being like, "Hey, Jude Law and Uma Thurman typecast as perfect people." I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see that.
Yeah. It's funny to leave, like, Ethan Hawke out of that, because not a bad-looking guy.
No, but, I mean, he does have to be, like, the nerdy dork in this.
That was the kind of role that Jude Law got quite a bit of the time, because right around this time, he also played Gigolo Joe in AI, basically a perfect sex robot. Bot.
Yeah.
God, and where the fuck can I buy me one of those?
Right, yeah, core memory for Jen right there.
Man, like, Jude Law... Like, 90s Jude Law crossed with Hajime Soriyama.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, I gotta go, Tim. I'm just gonna be...
Just finish up here. Yeah.
he was a beautiful man, and of course he represents this sort of spoiled potential in this movie. Mm-hmm. Because...
even if you're given a leg up, you aren't necessarily going to be successful. That's the hard truth of it.
Yeah, and that's one of the kind of interesting aspects of this movie is this idea that you can have every helping hand. You can start on third base, but mm-hmm. not make it to home plate.
Yeah, and then get just hit by a foul pitch.
Yes. Now, speaking of Jude Law's character, who is the real Jerome... mm-hmm. who basically gives up his identity for Ethan Hawke's Vincent.
There's one remaining commodity is his genetics.
Right, which I assume he's doing for money.
Yes.
Because he's very invested in Vincent's success.
Yeah, because when the sort of underworld fixer, played by Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub, yeah.
Yeah, which is nice. Sort of
this is another movie with a stacked cast.
It is.
Like,
yeah.
Kind of, you know, some old favorites and then some mm-hmm. Actors who are, like, just on the cusp of breaking out. Or maybe their notable project was, like, just a few years out.
Yeah, yeah. Dean Norris in a small role playing, again, a pig-headed cop.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you got a big ham head like that, what else are you going to play?
Right, yeah. Well, you could play, you know, the security director of a VR... secret facility in Lawnmower Man.
You could play a cop, Tim.
Ugh. I don't think I could.
Get a real douchey mustache.
Well, I mean, you know, a role open up from that guy from Mr. Show. He's not going to be doing anything anytime soon.
Yeah, you could be Jay Johnson's stand-in. That was fucking wild. Because I remember the day on Twitter when everyone was like, hey, look at this guy they're looking for January 6th. It looks just like Jay Johnson from Mr. Show. And then, like, God, I want to say it was like Tim Heidecker or one of those other comedians mm-hmm. really active on Twitter. Or I want to say it was like a friend of Tim Heidecker's was like, oh, yeah, actually, that is him.
Yeah.
And then the tweet got deleted, but it made it to law enforcement circles because just a couple days ago, they finally snagged Jay Johnson, which.
Right, yeah.
Big bummer because, I mean, I love Mr. Show. I like I like Bob's Burgers. He was Jimmy Pesto in Bob's Burgers. Very funny role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Then he just got brain poison.
Yeah. You got to watch out for the internet, kids.
Yeah. Don't go on the internet. Don't listen to any persuasive podcasts on the internet either. You can listen to ours because ours has never persuaded anyone.
Oh, I told you about my William Pat Buckley theory. Now let me tell you what I really think about QAnon.
Ah, oh, God. So the reason that I think, Jen, why you dislike this movie, despite its stylishness, like it had great location scouting, great locations in this.
A lot of brutalist architecture.
Yeah, a lot of brutalist architecture, a kind of, you know, retro futurist vibe.
Classic cars made electric.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the color grading, which people either really like or really hate going off Letterboxd reviews. Because there are a lot of...
I really like it because they weren't doing as much of this at the time, I feel.
No, I think you're right. And I do like the cinematography. And the cinematographer worked with Krzysztof Kieslowski on, I think, an episode of Decalogue and also the Three Colors trilogy. So, you know, this is some top flight shit we're talking about.
Yeah, he knows at least three colors. And that's...
I do red, I do white, and I do blue.
Yeah. Yellow, get that shit out of here. Green, fuck off.
But it is funny because the positive reviews, of course, are very complimentary of the cinematography. The negative reviews are like, why the fuck is this movie so yellow?
God damn it. Like, I want things to look like a picture on my phone. That's it. Everything should look like a Polaroid. Why don't movies look like when I'm looking around at stuff?
I do not perceive color temperature at all. I refuse. That is woke right. Bullshit.
Rainbows? You kidding me? That's no. We cannot have a complete color spectrum.
Wherever I am, the reality around me is perfectly white balanced. There is no yellow or blue cast to it at all.
Yeah.
It is all perfectly optimized. Because, yeah, I mean, you know, like, imagine how these people felt when they saw The Matrix in theaters.
Yeah, and they're just like, ugh.
Were these people responsible for that first DVD release of The Matrix where the colors were just, like, off?
Probably.
You remember that? Because, like, when I bought the DVD. Of course I bought the fucking DVD because I saw the movie 8 times in the theater.
Everyone did, yeah.
And I remember playing the DVD and saying, like, wait a minute, like, all the skin tones are, like, inching towards normal. It did not fucking look like this in the theater. And believe me, I knew what it looked like in the theater.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, to toot my own horn doesn't, you know, take any, like, great leap to figure this out, where it's like, oh, they gave everything, like, a CRT green tint because you're in a computer.
Right.
Like, it's clear and obvious and accepted. You're like, oh, you're doing something stylish with this. I get it.
Yeah,
but there's some people
that
that's just beyond, like, mm-hmm. comprehension.
Yeah, and on the Nebuchadnezzar, it looks completely different. It's almost like they thought this out beforehand.
Yeah, that's the problem. They're thinking of things. Audiences don't like that.
That is true.
Right. So the color grading is good. The locations are great. It's got, you know, nice costumes. It's a stylish movie.
Yeah. And going back to, I think, something which I brought up way earlier, like, I don't want to ding this movie for taking place in a stylized universe and kind mm-hmm. of exploring these ideas in broad strokes.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
And I think maybe in my 20s, I was more likely to be like, you know, why is everybody just got to be like, why is it all like white people dressed in suits and like everything, and they talk in a really stilted way and like blah, blah. I mean, you know.
You were an undergraduate at college, so you were allowed to have a lot of stupid opinions.
Yeah, like, I obviously knew everything in the world, and my taste mm-hmm. was impeccable, and would certainly never change or develop as I got older.
I mean, mine didn't, but I get your point.
You know what else I saw at Ackerman Union? I saw Gladiator, and I thought it was, like, the best movie I'd ever seen.
Jen, you're so basic.
Yeah, and then a few years later, I saw Spartacus, and I was like, oh.
I saw Boogie Nights, and man, the audience was riveted.
Oh, damn. That's awesome.
That was awesome. I bought that on DVD as well.
Did you go to that screening of Shadow of the Vampire?
Maybe.
Because I did not like that movie.
I don't remember much of that movie.
It's the one where Willem Dafoe plays
No, I mean, I remember the movie, but I don't remember much of it. I remember one shot from that movie.
And it was the famous shot from Nosferatu.
No,
I don't know.
See,
I haven't seen it in 20 years,
it was,
so.
No, it was where Willem Dafoe attacks a guy, and I'm like, ah, he is a vampire. But
oh,
the rest
cool.
of it I didn't need to remember. That should tell you everything you need to know about the movie.
There you go. I remember Cary Elwes was in it and not much else.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I saw Man on the Moon at Ackerman.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and God, and this, okay, here, to add credence to your theory about audiences being basic and dumb. So I watched Man on the Moon, and you know, Man on the Moon has the whole thing about there's Andy Kaufman, and then there's like his writing partner, whose name I forget.
Tony Clifton?
Well, Tony Clifton being the like character that Andy would play, but it was, you know, kayfabe, where it's like,
yes,
you aren't getting Andy playing Tony Clifton, you're getting Tony Clifton,
yeah.
And that's it. And
it was Jerry the King Lawler.
Right, yeah. So throughout the whole movie, there's like, it is Andy being Tony Clifton, except for when he isn't. But he's wearing so much makeup, and he's got the glasses on and the wig,
mm-hmm.
that even there's a point when, God, I forget who the other guy was. I want to say he's played by Paul Giamatti, whatever.
Bob Zmuda,
thank you. So,
man,
it's the other guy.
I don't know what part of my brain I dredged that out of, but goddamn.
It's amazing. But yeah, so So that's sometimes it's Andy playing Tony Clifton, sometimes it's Bob Zmuda, and they mentioned one time where it's like it's the other guy playing it's Bob Zmuda playing Tony Clifton on, you know, the Late Show with David Letterman, and Letterman leans over and he's like, you know, with all that makeup, you know, I can barely tell it's you, Andy. And the other guy's like, ah, he doesn't know I'm not even him. So. So spoilers for Man in the Moon, Andy Kaufman is dead. He made a whole career out of fooling people. Then he goes to see a psychic surgeon, and it's like, oh, this is all a fucking ruse as well. Joke's on me. So then he dies, but then Bob Zmuda still goes out and plays Tony Clifton. And then at the end, you see it's, you know, Andy Kaufman watching Bob Zmuda playing Tony Clifton, and he's still alive. And the girl afterwards is like, so did he die or not? Like, they're doing like a little, you know, the spirit lives on.
I hope you at least got some pussy.
No, not for several years. So sometimes audiences just don't get stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you can color grade something to be like, I'm going to be evocative of a different kind of climate, something that's somewhat nostalgic but also futuristic, and people are going to be like, why is it yellow?
Or even just, like, a flashback.
Yeah.
You know, like, something earlier, like, temporally, and it's like, what is this? I don't understand this. Why does it look weird?
Right. Yeah. What is Scorsese doing using 16mm film stock in the middle of his black and white, 35mm movie?
Ugh. Like, I guess he got the labels mixed up or something.
Well, you know, he's not a good filmmaker. He hasn't made one, superhero movie. He just does mob movies over and over again. like Silence, you know, about the Catholic mob.
What was Kubrick even doing driving Shelley Duvall to madness for the rest of her life, even though she spoke positively about him for the remainder of his life?
It's Stockholm syndrome. That's Shelley Duvall was it was part of the secret mind control MK Ultra that Stanley Kubrick worked on, because they had him back after the moon landing. So they're like, we need you in for one more job, and Stanley's like, all right, but you're killing us out here, Shelley. All right, I'll do it one more take.
See, the most feminist thing you can do is to dismiss a woman's own words about her lived experience so that you can cling to a narrative.
Right. That, or, you know, to
fits
to
your
them,
conception of the world.
Yeah, to treat them like some sort of fragile, inferior, second-class citizen. I mean, you know, what could be more feminist than trying to protect women from themselves?
Have you heard people saying, I don't know if anybody said this in like 30 or 40 years, but there actually were people who thought that Margaret Dumont didn't realize she was playing a character in those Marx Brothers movies, that she was like confused by everything they were doing.
They just brought her in like off the street.
Yeah. They were like, oh, you know, who are we going to put in our movie? Like, well, oh, no. Oh, here's the society matron that we've never met before and who doesn't understand that we're doing bits. Like, she worked with him like on the stage.
Acting.
Like, and I'm guessing that this was a woman who knew the value of what is commonly called a straight man.
Yeah, yeah.
Women
can't do comedy. Yeah. They can't. They have to be rolled in as complete oblivious rubes.
Yeah, like they either have no idea what's going on, like in the case of Margaret Dumont, or they're completely insane and broken, like Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, yeah, just a man, you know, controlled and manipulated them because they're just helpless. Do you think at some point she was like, that guy's mustache is painted on? Something isn't right here.
I don't even think that guy is Italian.
No. I mean, the way they behave, you're like, they're Italian. why isn't our podcast more popular?
Because there ain't no sanity clause, Tim.
All right, Gattaca, come on.
Okay, right, yes, the genetic code. Oh, yeah, because I was making a point about... No, I want to go back to Jude Law's character. Because I understand that... I don't know, and you can tell. Actually, you know what? Because you like doing this, Tim, tell me if I'm full of shit.
Oh, I will.
I encourage it, because one thing that I noticed when looking at Letterboxd reviews for this movie is that this could be a movie that doesn't have gay subtext so much as it has gay supertext.
Super gay text, yeah.
I mean, you know, you could throw it on the pile with another Gore Vidal penned movie, Ben-Hur, for being like, this is the gayest thing I've ever seen. Because I would argue...
Charlton Heston is, no, it's not.
As much as Uma Thurman does perfectly good work in this movie, and of course, she looks great.
She does.
I can see why she and Ethan got together. That's a hot couple. Her character isn't like the most developed. The most weight is kind of given to, of course, your protagonist, which fine, and then Jude Law's character, kind of the frustrated Superman who is now dealing with his disability. Now, keep in mind that Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman got together on the set. This is where they met, and then they became a couple.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it right now.
I feel like Jude Law and Ethan Hawke have better chemistry in this movie.
Well, they have more
the
scenes
heterosexual
together.
Pairing.
Yeah. They have more scenes together, and they have more of an interdependence. And kind of going back to my explanation that this is a stylish but slight movie, is that this has that basic, like you're saying, that you know, subtext, but it isn't something like, say, you know, Persona or Single White Female. Like, it's not that overt. It isn't that excessive, because really that's not what this movie's about. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jen doesn't like this movie, is because it is about the triumph of the human spirit.
I thought you were going to say because there's no gay kissing in it.
Well, that too.
Which is a significant flaw. And I am not alone, because if you go on Letterboxd and you look at the reviews, you will see dozens, maybe hundreds of people saying, hey, why didn't Ethan Hawke and Jude Law kiss in this movie? Which I think is a fair question. Now, and you know, I kid because I know it's 1997, and I don't, like Tim said, Andrew Niccol was making a movie about the human spirit overcoming adversity.
Yes.
Like a theme of this show, doing the best you can with what you have.
Right.
Even if they are inferior genetics. And all you have is your urine bags and your very big penis.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't even say it's big. It's just, you know, it's striking. Like, it's just... You know, like the floor model, where it's like, I'm trying to picture, like...
The point is, penises.
Right, just rubbing together.
Aesthetically attractive penis is the mark of the truly superior man. Maybe not the man with the best genetic code, but with the dick that you want to suck. Or at least watch while it expels urine.
Does its thing, yeah.
I can't emphasize to you, the listener, enough how often they make a thing out of Ethan Hawke's penis, because it kind of bookends the movie.
Well, you know, the genetic material comes out of it. Maybe that has something to do. It's all thematic.
So you know the part at the end when I'm going to call him the horny lab tech. At the end. Hey, Ethan Hawke, slide me them 7 digits.
He tells him about the Blood Eagle. Yeah.
This movie's full of white supremacists. But anyway, near the end of the movie, right before Ethan Hawke is getting ready to go on his rocket to Titan or whatever, the tech who's been testing his piss every day for God knows how many years.
Yeah, taste testing.
He just, you know, hey, if it's coming out of that,
right?
You know, it's liquid gold.
Oh, that reminds me, I got a picture I need to send you.
So he says to to Vincent, Ethan Hawke's character, he says, I never told you about my son, did I? He's a big fan of yours. And mm-hmm. I honestly expect him to say, I told him all about your penis.
Yeah, I know you want him to say that.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's implicit. It's in the text is what I'm saying.
Right.
No, but yeah. Actually, it's because he knows that Vincent is a pretender, but he doesn't snitch.
He's not a class traitor. That's the thing.
That's right, because he believes in Vincent's quest because he kind of lets slip that maybe his son didn't necessarily win the genetic lottery, but they still believe in him because he's their kid, right?
Yeah.
So he definitely identifies with Vincent in that respect.
Yeah, Vincent has earned his place, and by the end of it, it's like, maybe you're not really the guy. I'm not going to snitch on you. Yeah, see, I recently finished watching The Expanse, and I also wonder, too, why there weren't any scenes of Drummer kissing Bobby. So, you know, we all have our own...
There you go.
Yeah, that, you know, just nearly perfect, this movie. But, you know, same with The Expanse.
And let's also keep in mind that this was back when... in terms of queer representation, you had to kind of take what you could get... And you had to extrapolate.
Yeah, and the Turkish
from media,
baths.
Except on, you know, there on rare occasions there were mainstream media properties which touched upon gay or lesbian or trans themes. I think this was right around the time in which Boys Don't Cry came out, because I remember seeing that at UCLA.
Right.
Which is a movie about the life and death of a trans man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Bound, too. That movie had a couple of leses in it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were kind of on the cusp of something. Like, we were aware of queerness, but we weren't necessarily ready for it, like, on the big screen.
And, no, especially with all the casual homophobia in the 90s.
Right. And now we're experiencing some pushback on that because, of course, queer people are much more visible. And there's plenty of queer media out there, mm-hmm. and it's slightly more permissible to be overtly queer on the screen. You're still going to have bigots yelling at you about it, but who the fuck cares what they think? But they're currently pissing and shitting themselves with rage in an extinction burst right now, so there you go. Anyway, the important thing is that,
Oh, yeah, I mean, hey, while you're at it, someone going into work pretending to be someone they weren't, genetically born as? Bingo.
There you go. And that could have been, man, like, what a twist that would have been on this movie, where it's like, yeah, like, I'm genetically perfect. I'm also gay.
That's a hat on a hat.
I know, but I...
That's two different...
No, you know what it is? You know what it is, though? I think part of the frictionlessness of this movie comes from the fact that we don't see, apart from Vincent, we don't see a lot of the have-nots in this society. And
well, yeah, I mean, you only see them when they're being rounded up by police, which, I mean, watch Dragnet.
Right. And, you know, you don't see much of the scum classes, as Jeremy Clarkson might call them.
Right, yeah.
Which might be interesting. And everything which might touch on that theme is filtered through Ethan Hawke's character. Like, the high-achieving guy with, like, a heart defect.
Yeah.
I mean, and, I don't want to be a hater. I'm trying not to be a hater. I'm trying so hard. But... I do understand why some people might object to that kind of treatment of disability in this movie, where it's like, hey, you know, if you just keep crawling up that twisted staircase, you can make it to the top. And also, like, the disabled guy will very helpfully bump himself off for you so you can go to the stars because you worked so fucking hard. And I understand that, and this is like the least charitable reading of the film. I'm kind of taking it to its extreme.
Yeah, I'll say.
But I mean, there is that, but that's the kind of thing that I like to see in my intellectually challenging films, are these kind of uncomfortable questions rather than just attractive people being high achievers and going to space.
Well, there's more to it than that. I mean, it is about someone who, it is an underdog story, is a triumph mm-hmm. of the human spirit. It, I mean, sure. as someone who worked to earn his place there. If it had been about Jude Law's character just succeeding at whatever he was, like, yeah, I can see that being boring because there's no challenge to it. This is about someone
who's
like...
I'm not saying we need to see, like, Jude Law's genetically superior mm-hmm. character, like, succeeding. It's like, what is the... And, you know, the movie does deal with it. Kind of the aftermath of being severely debilitated and the fact that basically your whole life has been robbed from you. You know, simply because you stepped in front of a car. And also the fact that, you know, he basically says that it was on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's another fascinating thing, which is like, oh, you can have everything handed to you on a platter, and yet you might still feel like you're worthless because you got second place. Like, you have perfection in your hands, but it's hollow. Somehow.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, before they shut down the site, visit, you know, Reddit's, visit the After Gifted subreddit. Like, I can totally see someone who's like, I'm perfect. What am I doing in second place? Like, if mm-hmm. your identity is wrapped around that, yeah, that can absolutely be debilitating for you. Doing a third rate podcast no one listens to.
Also, it's very convenient to put the on off switch on the inside of the incinerator.
It doesn't matter, Jen.
I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah, why didn't they have a scene explaining how he was able to rig up the thing to incinerate himself? Or why didn't they have something that wasn't thematically consistent with what we saw at the beginning of the movie?
Look, I get it.
Give me the Robert Altman version of this.
I don't want to CinemaSins this movie because that sucks.
Yes, that is really inferior criticism, but yes.
It's just that there's a point where, like, when you take the premise as far as it can go,
mm-hmm.
that it stretches, like, pretty thin. And at no point was I sitting here like, this is the gotcha moment where, like, the entire premise of this man basically biologically living a lie, you know, mm-hmm. this is where it falls apart. You know, it's an exploration of an idea, and there has to be, like, a suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, you just have to be on board with the premise or not.
But the, I mean, forensically, it's kind of, like, all over the place. Because I feel like no matter how much Ethan Hawke scrubbed,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're still going to be like, I mean, you know, hey, he's running on the treadmill with all these other perfect specimens, you know, spraying sweat all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They should have swabbed him. Right, I did, yeah. Like, in one of the Letterboxd reviews, someone said, yeah. Why didn't they just test the poop at Gattaca?
Maybe they don't poop at work.
I've never understood that. I'll poop wherever I have to.
Well, that's why you wouldn't get it. That's why you wouldn't be able to infiltrate Gattaca.
Well, I've never tried to claim that I was genetically superior, because that would be absurd on its face.
Right, yeah. I mean, anyone has seen you. What were we talking about? Poop.
Penises.
Right, yeah. we really bring our A game, don't we?
Also, how did Jude Law's character pee out, like, two lifetimes worth of piss?
He was just really hydrated.
He's like, God, this almost looks like water. It's really clear.
He put on, like, 30 pounds over a weekend. Maybe he just had it. Weight. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, completely unrelated to this scam, I have been collecting my piss since I was a teenage boy. It's a little trick
I learned from Howard Hughes. What the hell else was I going to say before Jen kept talking? I don't know.
Why don't you use that big superior brain of yours?
All right, I will. So here's the thing. Jen getting caught up on minutia about, like, oh, I don't like that this movie is about a person working hard and succeeding, because I know you can't relate to that. But I can understand how if say, for example, you're one of our zero black listeners, and you would see this movie and be like, yeah, I understand that, like, the guy who's in a disadvantaged, you know, role has to work twice as hard to, like, you know, end up where all the people who, like, are able to coast into a white-collar job are able to do. He's listening to it and be like, yeah, right on. If he existed.
Well, he's definitely a guy, because our audience is, like, 95% male.
I know.
Which is how you know the show is good.
I can only do the show I'm capable of. Sorry.
Next week, Boondock Saints.
Right.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, and I don't want to ding the movie too hard for... I think that we kind of had to wait until, like, the 2020s before we really started to get diverse casting, which I think is nice to see. It's not going to solve any of society's problems, but it's nice to see. It's nice to see some variety in your cast. And they do... I think that they knew... when they were casting this film, they're like, okay, we can't just have everybody be white. Like, there are, you know, you have three white leads, but, you know, they do make the society surrounding Gattaca, like, diverse. So there's no implication of, like, oh, like, this is Hitler's vision, like, made reality, where it's like only Aryan people are being, like, specially bred.
Right. Well, I mean, you can put a subtext into that. Like, there is historical precedence for people assuming as much.
And then there's also, like, the discomfort of, well, geez, that's like a whole other thing. I'm too stupid, Tim. I'm struggling.
I know.
Inferior DNA.
Well, why don't you barf it out, and then I'll mold it into something useful.
You know what I do want to say is that Ethan Hawke is really good in this.
Yeah.
And I specifically want to call out the scene, the twisty scene at the end, where he comes face to face with his brother.
Right, because he kind of gets written out earlier in the movie. Mm-hmm. You just never find out what happens to him.
I mean, it's nice that they bring it back around, because that is obviously an important component of Vincent's story, is always competing with his sibling.
Yeah, his sibling who really has had, like, all the advantages. He's basically all of Rimmer's brothers from Red Dwarf. Although that isn't a can of worms worth opening, because Rimmer is fucked up.
Although I had thought that it was implied in the movie that some of the invalids also will go into law enforcement.
Yeah, that is a dig that the mission director is like, well, you know, everyone here is, like, you know, the cream of the crop, best of the best. And, you know, I understand there's some people who have had, you know, genetic, given all the genetic advantages, but, you know, they aren't qualified to work here, but they could maybe be a cop.
Yeah. And we all know that the process of selection for cops is
highly discerning. Yes,
they do not want the best, and certainly not the brightest.
Yeah,
I think they select for certain personality disorders, which disqualify one from other more useful professions.
Yes,
let's put it that way.
We want someone to enforce the law, not interpret it. Just
right.
Yeah, make things happen.
But yeah, that's interesting, because Vincent's brother, Anton, who was the one who was gifted with his father's name, by the way.
Yeah.
Because
the favorite
Vincent
son.
Vincent was the oldest, but because he was, you know, the roll of the dice kid, as his mother is about to name him after his father, Elias Codius, steps in and is like, oh, no, Vincent, my middle name.
Yeah.
And the younger son is then given dad's name.
Yeah, we're gonna name him Ricky Tikki Tembo No Shar Rambo Charibari Ruchi Pip Peri Pambo.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
You don't know that story?
I do not.
Oh. Well, maybe someone did, and they're like, yes. You mispronounced it though, Tim.
It's like a nice little Easter egg in the show. It's if one person laughs at a dumb thing we say, we know it was all worthwhile.
That's more than usual, yeah.
Doesn't make us any fucking money, but hey, we take what we can get. That reminds me, because this is going to be a free episode, if you are mm-hmm. listening, you can get 2 extra episodes a month for only $5 and up a month. You don't even have to spend the up. You can spend the $5 a month, you get the mm-hmm. extra episodes, and you get to join us in the Discord where Tim and I hang out and say stupid shit.
That's true. We do say a lot of stupid things, but we were having a great discussion about the French Connection just the other day. It turns
That's
out we're
right.
in favor of it.
Yes, and in fact, we did briefly consider just punting and talking about the French Connection for the next episode, but it seemed like cheating.
I could do a like French Connection as a game of Traveler, and
of course
I know,
you could.
Yeah, I'm sure at least one of our subscribers would be like, okay, I'm here for this.
Why don't you build you know, the Chicago L train, and you can get little minifigs of Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider.
Because I'm doing the LA Metro as a Leo train for our collaborative Mills build for Legola. And it'll be...
Well, this would be the perfect opportunity for you to procure minifigures of William Peterson and John Pankow.
Yeah, but I'm doing the Metro line with... I'm using that new ugly neon yellow.
Oh, you're no fun anymore.
Right, I know. Well, I'm not going to do the red line. Like, ugh. I don't, although, there is a Lego hypodermic piece, so maybe I should do the red line.
Damn.
I'm doing the Expo line because, you know, West Side.
West Side!
Yeah, so it is a lily white cast. It was a, it wasn't...
It's 1997.
It's 1997. You're going to get...
You know
that,
why?
That's why The Matrix was so groundbreaking, where, like, is that a Latino?
This was pre-Latinx.
Yeah. Latinx, is that what it is?
Latinx. I'm sorry, but I always want to say Latinx.
Say Latinx.
It's funny.
It's cute, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I know that there is some disagreement on whether or not Latinx is a preferred nomenclature. Anyway, so I'm just going to keep looking at Foo's Gone Wild on Instagram.
All right, cool. So yeah, but it does fit with the theme of sort of bioessentialism, determining, you know, one's station in society. Yeah, Jude Law's character is unable to, you know, cope with his failed promises. It is about, you know, what you are expected of versus what you achieve, and they do even mention that in the movie where it's like, what is it? Alan Arkin is talking to, you know, Gore Vidal's the you know, mission director, be like, hey, do you have anyone who exceeds expectations? He's like, that's not possible. Like, we've evaluated these people to understand what their expectations are, and if they, you know, happen to see them, then we recalibrate. It's, you know, it is a metrics based society.
Yeah, which is certainly relevant today, where everything yeah. is evaluated.
Yeah, everything is quantified. You learn the cost of everything, the value of nothing. But
yeah, and this might be like a sort of simplified view of a potential kind of eugenicist future.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you
like
know,
if you have the option of making the perfect person for whatever qualifies as perfect, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, because we haven't quite got to that point yet, but there are certainly questions now about, you know, for example, selecting the sex of your child in mm-hmm. the womb. Even if you can't see someone's genetic code on like an individual letter basis, you have the option today to opt not to have a child with certain disabilities. And I know that's a, you know, that's a whole fucking debate about the ethics of that.
Right.
Like, this movie does genuinely raise a lot of interesting questions about the mm-hmm. the implications of this kind of technology.
Yeah, and also like some
and
of the...
it does hit the right notes. And mm-hmm. again, I'm not saying that the movie is just dog shit. It's just that it hits.
I'm just asking the question: is this movie dog shit?
Well, no, because after I watched it, I was kind of like, you know, the second time I didn't like it either, but I can't say that it sucked. I think that this is a question of taste, because this movie does hit the correct notes. The story is structured correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of the simplest treatment of these themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a complex movie, which I think is why I remember everything about it, because it is easily digestible.
Yeah, that's another good point. And maybe this is why, in spite of the fact that this movie actually did not do well in its theatrical release, it has resonated with people. Mm-hmm. And okay, fine, like it's, you know, baby's first look at eugenics, like,
right, yeah,
but for some people that's enough, and that's actually fine. Like,
yeah, and not, some babies do need another look at eugenics, because, you know, what you
stupid babies need the most attention.
Right, yeah, well, like what you mentioned about, you know, it being kind of an entrance into this notion about, you know, do genetics make the man. I mean, yes. Just go on a dating site and be like, you know, I need a guy who's 6 feet tall, and people who like advertise themselves as, like, you know, unvaccinated purebloods and shit like that, where it's like, sure, your genetic history doesn't play into it. Like, you can still be a loser piece of shit even with all the right genetics. Like, that doesn't enter into it. That's the,
yes,
I think, the point that the movie is making, where it's like, you know, your genetics don't define you. It is the limitation of the society that created this this requirement or this expectation. And also unfairly, in another way, too, where it's like, you know, maybe your resentful older brother who, you know, can't, you know, brick the fact of his, or sorry, younger brother, of his older, genetically inferior brother,
saving,
you know,
his ass
over
twice.
Him, saving his ass twice. Yeah, or Jude Love being like, why don't I get first place? Why don't I get 100% on every test, Mom? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, shit, and, like, oh, and I don't think I finished praising Ethan Hawke's performance when he is confronted by his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he strikes the exact right note of almost hysteria, because he's come this far and he's like, right, you have got to be fucking kidding me. And it's like almost reckless without being histrionic. It's really good.
Yeah.
And yeah, it doesn't... So, and it's stuff like that which makes it not matter that they're in, like, a big echoey room yelling at each other, like, these very, right, personal things. It's like, it doesn't fucking matter. It's about, like, these two brothers coming back
together
again. It's
the emotional confrontation, yeah.
Being, like, him being confronted, like, right as his goal is almost within his grasp, and like, oh, fuck, this has come back again? Like, seriously?
Yeah. It's like, I'm still in your shadow.
Yeah. What did you think about the scene where the cops go to Jerome's house and Jude Law has to stand in for Jerome? Like, he is Jerome, but he's,
right,
got to,
yeah,
play Jerome.
Yeah, I think that's funny, because you kind of see what, like, a piece of shit Jerome is. Because he's, mm-hmm, like, I know what I have to do. But, like, he, you know, he figures, he knows the play of the scene.
Yes.
And, you know, he knows that, you know, Uma is the one who is at risk here. And, mm-hmm, and so, he, you know, when they show up and he's like, where's my kiss? It's like, oh, you're really going to fucking do this?
And they do it quite well, because you can read all the emotions going on in the scene.
Yeah.
Where she's like, are you kidding me? And then
it's like, I know you aren't you, but I need to sell that you are who you say you are. This other guy, you got me over a barrel here, you son of a bitch.
And then Jude Law, like, at the end of the scene, like, you can tell that he feels a little bit bad about it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hard to do. This could have been like a really, really flat character. But, mm-hmm, he invests the character with some depth, because there's more going on within Jerome than just like, oh, the sad disabled guy.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder about everything.
Right. And I know that they oh, you know what? I forgot. the fact that Vincent has to go through that fucking like leg breaking surgery to make him taller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I've heard that that's gotten, don't quote Cumtown, Jen. Don't quote Cumtown. Don't quote
Just
Cumtown.
Quote Mr. Show or Mr. Science Theater. It's allowed.
I've heard that that's like one of the most painful procedures you can have. Like, it's like 6 months of agony, basically.
Yeah, and that is fitting that it's, you know, the two characters that can't walk for one reason or another.
Yep, but he
And
got,
I do remember that shot, too.
Yeah, and but no, he goes ahead, he gets the surgery that Nick Mullen always wanted.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is. But, yeah, it, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, at that point, it's like, yeah, my dedication was never questioned after that.
Right.
Yeah, nor should it be, because, yeah, that's, you know, he's in for it.
Yep.
And it is nice, too, because it is a witty little script, too, in that there are things where, you know, when they're sussing him out, like, oh, I look a lot like him. I got the same haircut. I can pull the same face. I look like him. And, you know, Tony Shalhoub was like, hang on, not so fast. He's two inches taller than him. But he's like, well, how tall are you? And there's Jude Law in the wheelchair, 4'9". It's just like, oh. Like, this is one bitter
someone's
man.
A little bitter.
Yeah. So you can kind of see, you know, when he has to play as not Vincent, when Uma Thurman comes around, he's like, just give me something here. Like, I've been dealing with a bad hand for, like, the last, I don't know how many years.
Right. And that's why I bring up the scene, because it seems... Because the detective, like Anton, who we will find out that it's his brother, like he doesn't, wait a minute, okay, how does this work? Because I want to make sure that I'm not like fucking up like all the plot points.
Yeah.
Because police detective Anton goes in to see Jerome, quote unquote, and is confronted by Jude Law. I don't remember if he has come face to face with fake Jerome, that is Ethan Hawke. At Gattaca before.
Good question. And it could very well be one of those things where it's like, Uma knows he isn't Jerome. He knows he isn't Jerome. The detective knows he isn't Jerome. But he draws the blood and it's like, no, you're Jerome.
Yeah, because does the detective like suddenly realize like early on in the movie, like, oh, that's my fucking brother, dude. Like, what the fuck is he doing?
Right,
and he's
yeah.
just like looking for the evidence to, you know, kind of fall into place.
Right. Well, the overriding theme the whole time is, you know, genetics really rule over this whole society. You know, and they make it explicit too when, you know, Vincent goes to take his test to qualify for Gattaca, and they just like test his genetics, and he's like, well, you know, where's the rest of the test? And the doctor's like, that was the test.
Yep.
Because, you know, as a class, like, they all kind of protect their own, and they look out for each other. And it's a thing that, you know, Jerome understands, but Vincent doesn't, is that, you know, if you're born into it, it's like, we'll give you a mulligan on a lot of things. It's like, you know, rich people getting away with things that other people would be, you know, thrown in solitary for the rest of their lives for. Have you seen this thing in the news about Trump lately? With the thing with the classified documents?
I mean, so, speaking of genetic Superman, I mean, just look at the guy.
He'll live to be 200.
I know. That's the thing. Oh, shit. Tim, do you know what I realized the other day?
What?
I think that Henry Kissinger will eventually become his divine shadow.
Oh, God. Oh, that's sick. That's awful. I mean, at least aim for Palpatine or something.
I think it'll happen.
Yeah, I could believe it. Yeah, I saw that picture of him.
Whew, yeah, I'm going to have to bone up on the history of the Brunin G again. But anyway.
They're a race of warrior poets.
You can give it to me after the show.
Okay.
So this movie raises a lot of questions about like a society of Ubermenschen, I guess. You know, there are women. But, you know, this is 1997. Like
Uberfrauen, yeah.
You had one very attractive woman in the cast, and she played the character of woman.
Mm-hmm.
She and played that was the girlfriend. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is a little bit of development to her character. We learn that she's not, she's like, hey, like, yeah, I'm here with all the other genetically perfect specimens, but...
Yeah, she's not perfect.
Yeah, she's, but you know, that makes her even more appealing, doesn't it?
Right, yeah.
Flaw in the iris.
Mm-hmm, yeah. A cowgirl with giant thumbs, that sort of thing.
The Venus de Milo.
Yeah.
What else? The bride? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Uma Thurman. Did you know that she was married to Gary Oldman for a hot second?
No. I'd like she to was, be a fly on that wall.
Before she got married to Ethan Hawke, she and Gary Oldman were married for like a couple of years. I think she was like 20 and he was like 32.
Hmm. Oh, okay. So it was one of those.
I'm sure it was one of those things that was fun for a while.
Yeah.
Who knows how long or short of a while it was, but they split up after a couple of years.
Hmm.
And then Andrew Niccol wrote and directed Gattaca. Mm-hmm. Ethan Hawke met Uma Thurman on the set. Mm-hmm. Yes. They had kids, and now we're into another generation of Nepo babies.
Great. Oh, people born into affluence, you say?
Yeah. Wild.
Crazy. I can't imagine such a thing. They should do a movie about that, but one with like a police investigation kind of tacked on, but they don't really go into the details of it because that's not really what the movie's about.
If you can kind of combine it with like old episodes of Forensic Files,
mm-hmm.
then that's even better. Like, you know, let's hear about the hair follicles and the skin flakes.
Mm-hmm. I do like to the, well, I mean, Jen, you'll appreciate it, that the cops are basically useless because it's like, look, we just come in and scan for genetic material, and if we find any that's black, I mean, any that is faith-born, then we just arrest that person. We go home.
Yes.
And it's funny, one of the characters referring to them as Hoovers, which has a nice double meaning.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, as I mentioned earlier, like, it turns out that the patrician head of the company is the one who caved the other guy's skull in.
Yeah, and that detail didn't really sit well with me. It was like, look, we ran out of time, the movie's over, pin it on someone, be like, and he's spit in his eye. Really, someone did something that careless in a world where,
oh, now
where, like,
who's doing CinemaSins?
I just, I'm saying.
Ooh, you're full of shit, Jen, but this didn't sit too well with me. I'm just giving you a hard time.
It's because you're full of shit, Jen, with your crummy genetics and your 2X chromosomes.
There are the, you know, that's a thing which I find very funny about
like he
TERFs.
Had to have known, but go ahead.
Transphobes. They're all, because, you know, you see them on Twitter and they all have, like, you know, XX and their display names and shit. And it's like, I wonder if you tested all of them genetically, like, if you would find something like fucky, like chromosomally, like it's like, oh, you're XXY. That's weird, huh?
Oh,
and then they'd
wow.
have to kill themselves.
Guess you gotta use the men's room now.
Yeah, sorry.
Hmm. And then get beaten up there. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, stochastic terrorism. It's fun. But
right. So genetics turns. They continue to be a thorny issue. Who would have thought?
Who knew? Well, I think that is human knowledge expands, like these issues get thornier. Like in 1997, like there, you know, we understood a certain amount of things about DNA and genetics. Now we understand a hell of a lot more, but we're all still subject to these like very human impulses. Mm-hmm. You know what it is? It's that I like movies which kind of dig in to that, those very human qualities, which are often ugly. And I think the overall, kind of the cleanliness of this movie. Like, yes, Gore Vidal's director character does end up being the murderer, but there isn't a lot that's sordid about these, Ubermenschen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it has, well, it's,
you know,
a reductive premise.
I always think about, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just thought of the mental image that mm-hmm. applies here. It's like the opening of Blue Velvet. It's the bugs writhing underneath the lawn,
mm-hmm.
under the very clean surface. But that's why I maybe respond to David Lynch a little more, because he definitely got, like, deep into like some of the worst parts of the human psyche.
Right.
You know, Firewalk with Me, etc.
Yeah, so maybe it's more anodyne than you're looking for.
Yeah, and it's okay that a movie is not for me, and I don't want to take it away from people who do enjoy the film. Like I said, I can't say that this movie sucked. It's a well-made film. It's kind of a nice way to pass the time if you like science fiction, kind of like mainstream science fiction. It's not Tetsuo the Iron Man or something, but you know, that's a different kind of picture.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you think of another, not directed, it was Peter Weir, but Andrew Niccol Penn film, The Truman Show?
This crap about like the, I don't know, the perseverance of the human spirit, I just really don't go for. No, I mean, like, I watch it and I'm like, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice, like, kind of self-contained story. Remember when Jim Carrey just, like, ruled the planet?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Ever since, in Living Color, he's... yeah, he's also in that movie Man on the Moon. I told you about that one.
But yeah, that's that.
It's got a very controversial ending. Not a lot of people understood it.
Gattaca was Andrew Niccol's debut film, and it didn't really hit. But right on the heels of that, he did Truman Show, which was a massive success. And for whatever reason, people really responded to that film. I don't know if it. I mean, well, it's never any one thing with a film. It's, you know, people like Jim Carrey, people like the story. You know, Peter Weir made like a pretty.
It was about TV, like reality yarn. TV. Yeah, people like that.
Yes, because do you remember there was Truman Show, and then there was Ed TV with Matthew McConaughey, which I don't think did as well.
No.
Yeah, but this is an interesting thing about Truman Show because when I was taking screenwriting at UCLA.
Oh, that trade school.
Where I learned a trade that I barely use, but we were given copies of the screenplay to Truman Show, and there was a scene that did not appear in the feature that made it to theaters because when Truman is kind of desperately trying to escape like the fake town, there's a point where he grabs a baby from a baby carriage and threatens to fucking smash it on the sidewalk if they don't let him go.
Right.
They did not put that in the film, probably because they thought it was a bit too much, but...
That is a bit much.
I think that's, you know, that's a great moment because it really tells you how fucking desperate this guy is.
Right.
But, I don't know, like, maybe I feel like everyone who went gaga for The Truman Show maybe wouldn't dig something in kind of the tone of, I mean, I've talked about this movie a lot to you recently, Martin... the movie which eventually makes you feel sorry for a rapist and murderer.
Murderous rapist, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, he's going through some things, you know? Nobody's perfect.
I mean, the guy's stuck in Pittsburgh. You just feel bad for him.
Yeah, he's already dead.
That shit sucks.
Yeah. Our one Pittsburgh listener would be like, click.
Well, see you later, bro, because I know you're a bro.
What else? The other thing that I like, because I had many takeaways from this movie that I apparently committed entirely to memory, involuntarily.
It's easily digestible.
Right, yeah. And I know I mentioned this in another episode, which I think is why we're talking about it now, in that, you know, there's Ethan Hawke, there's Vincent where he's trying to do his work, and they got the mugshot of the guy they're looking for, which is him, up all over the place. And it kind of spooks him in the middle of his work. And so, like, he's, you know, they're talking about, oh, it's like a million, you know, lines of code and not one mistake. And then, you know, he's working on his flight path, and the flight path's all doofy because he's distracted because he thinks he's going to be found out and arrested. And then that's when the, you know, mission director comes by and he's like, is this the flight path that we discussed? And, you know, he just kind of looks
straight
at him.
Into the sun?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, just like... This is This is full on, like, you know, class bluster. This is you making your, you know, your deception check based on your social score in Traveler. Please game with me.
Come to the Discord, people. Right, $5 a month. Come hang with us in the Discord. There's a whole Traveler channel. Tim is suffering. Help him out.
True.
Call now.
You can end Tim's suffering for just 30 cents a day.
For pennies
a day, you can help out other people afflicted with the hobby of tabletop role playing. But yeah, so he's got this doofy flight path, and the mission director is like, "Is this the flight path we discussed?" And he just kind of turns to him, and he's like, "Yep,
absolutely,
yeah, absolutely." And the mission director is like, "Hey, you're the fucking genetically perfect genius. I guess you're right."
Yeah, why would he even question it? I mean, such a notion would be completely absurd.
Yeah, it's like, which of us is an astrophysicist? Raise their hand. Oh, wait. So, yeah, it's like just based in class, you can just kind of bluster your way by. Like, you know, if you're, I don't know, putting Snickers bars in your pockets at a 7-Eleven and then you walk out and be like, hey, he's dressed well. You probably don't need to buy that guy. He knows what he's doing. I don't know. It's
fine. If you're the kind of person that they don't automatically start following as soon as you walk into the store.
Yeah. So there is a woke context, like, you know, under the surface of this, but it's been so, like, deftly sanitized that you don't even notice until you review it 20 years later and you're like, oh yeah, this is everywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't know why Jen has such a problem with this movie.
It must be because I'm a fucking bitch.
No, you're one of those film snobs that just resents a plucky little movie, someone's debut opening, and you're like, no, I must grind this movie into the dirt.
You know why, Tim? It's because I just don't want to see a white man succeed. And that's why society is so woke now.
Right, yeah. Also, this movie can be used as a nice allegory of, you know, the internet factoid about black astronaut Ronald McNair, who couldn't check out books at a segregated library and then ended up getting the library named after him. So that's a real fuck you to segregation, and good for him. So
you
yeah, we've taken a
for all mankind.
Right, it's true. We've taken a stand against segregation. I think we can pat ourselves on the back for that one, Jen.
Well, as a white person, I think I will.
Yeah, we're being good allies, Jen. Such good allies.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I feel really good about myself.
I feel genetically superior now.
I'm gonna go watch a Jordan Peele movie and feel very smart.
Like, that's true. That is true.
Thank you, Amy Poehler.
Right.
Is there anything else that we want to say about Gattaca?
Jeez.
Penis.
Right. Uma Thurman, wood. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's crazy, dude. Seriously?
Yeah. Yes, I'm pro Uma Thurman, anti-segregation.
Ethan Hawke is like, come on, my ex? Come on, dude. She's all right, but...
Well, yeah, you mentioned her, and Ethan just, like, rolls his eyes and exhales.
And then he's like, now Jude like, Law. Those are some kissable lips, let me tell you.
He's like, you want to date an actress? Do you have any idea? the slight but stylish Gattaca. Check
That's
it out.
That's a good way of putting
back
it.
Back in time, yes. That's what I put on my dating profile. I put 6 feet tall. You've got to see this penis. Genetically pure.
It's insane, this guy's penis.